Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Sorry. Those headphones look like you know, I grew up with, I don't know if this version of a dad exists anymore for people, but there was like the one type of dad who at night would like sit in a big comfortable chair with headphones like that, like with some kind of Bev slowly sipping, you know, like the quiet, isolated dad.
It's funny you should say that, because do you know what these really are? Can you see?
Are they coasters or something?
These are Grados, which are really nice headphones that are actually made in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
But these are Bushmills promotional Grados that I got I got for free. They're made with Bushmills oak barrels.
That's perfect. So I nailed it.
You did. You totally got it all together, dude.
Yeah.
They're a little bit too nice for what we're doing, but
hey, you know, man. You see this shirt I'm wearing?
Yeah, I do see that shirt. The owl.
It's a Crevelar Tack shirt.
Okay.
Which is a cool, you know, metal-y kind of hardcore band, I believe from Finland.
Where they're all from.
Huh?
Where they're all are,
yeah, all the good black ones, metal anyway. Bands, at least. And I've been wearing this shirt. I'm on my third day. I know we're going to start talking about shirts again. This is how we started the last episode. But I hadn't realized. So I wore this shirt all day yesterday. And yesterday I had to welcome a few people into my home, such as like inspectors or people giving estimates, you know, like those types of people. And at one point I had heard something I didn't like. And I assume I was acting in a strange way. And my wife came home right at that time. And she was like, "You looked so scary back there." And I forget sometimes that, like, that I'm sort of like a hulking big person with like a mustache and long hair in like old tattered black jeans always. And then I wear a shirt with this, like, you know, eyeless owl, like this huge shirt, and then all of a sudden someone tells me they have to dig somewhere I don't like, and I get this face. People are really scared of me. And I really just don't see myself that way. I truly don't. Like, I don't understand that I have that kind of presence.
That's
that
hilarious.
Could actually frighten another person. I feel so gentle.
Yeah, you are. You are. You're gentle.
But they don't
human.
Know that.
No.
Yeah.
I think it's cool. It's better than being the other way around, right?
Were you ever scared of me?
No.
Is there ever a time that
Sorry,
I threatened
Eddie.
You at all?
No. I've been in this racket long enough to know a lot scarier looking dudes than you.
Yeah.
And also to know that, you know, you can't judge a book by its cover.
It's true. Well, you found out the fun way that a guy like me, give me an hour alone in New York City, I'm going to a diner. You know, I'm not going to the Times Square peep booths. I'm not getting drugs. I'm going to sit with some eggs.
Hell yeah.
Hopefully nobody else in there, so I can just, you know, sit there like an old man at the bar, just judging other people.
And, so this is what, you know, I mean, this is, it can be a great advantage. I mean, really, it's kind of the optimal way to be, which is to be a big teddy bear who looks like a dangerous polar bear, because, you know, people won't mess with you when you don't want them to, right?
That's actually not always the case. when you're in kind of like alpha dog scenarios where there is some alpha dogs around,
right,
sometimes they go for the biggest target,
right?
You know what I mean? The thing that looks the scariest to try to alpha the room,
right?
So no, I've definitely been in those situations before too, you know, but that's one thing about, I really did, like, you know, it's just one of those weird things about life. Like, I truly did start so pure and so innocent, where my intentions were so great. And any kind of conflict really did terrify me. So I would just do anything in my power to, like, stay away from those situations. And I kind of almost, like, I had to, like, force myself into the world because of how much it, like, scared me. Like, I almost literally didn't go on my first tour because of how just petrified I was. I wasn't excited as much as I was petrified.
Right.
And I had to, like, put myself in it and make myself do it. Luckily, I had some cautionary tales in, like, my family and my past that led to me going, yo, you have to do this because the other road is bad. But, like, so, and now here I stand almost 40, and I definitely got over, like, a lot of that shit just by pure exposure.
Right.
But still, if you strip away the scary owl shirt, the long hair, and the mustache, I'm like 4 years old, and I just want to find my blankie and be like cold and someone cuddling me and telling me everything's going to be okay. Right. Isn't that what we all want?
It is actually what we all want. Even the real dangerous guys.
Right. They probably want it more.
Yeah,
right?
They do. They do, for sure.
That's like when I see like a, like, so I saw an image the other day of like some random couple at a Walmart, you know, some old fucking flabby shit couple. Like, I don't give a shit about these people wearing like Nazi face masks in like a Walmart.
What?
You know?
Yeah. Swastikas?
Yeah, with a swastika on it. And, you know.
Holy shit.
Like, obviously my instinct is like, fuck these people to a point. But then I'm like, what kind of like, you just want attention. You just want like a hug. Like, what happened to you to make you have to go to a Walmart and seek the validation and attention of random people or try to get on a viral video or whatever the fuck you're doing by doing that? But the thing that's making you do that isn't a good thing. It's like, that's not like a safe person. That's not a happy person.
No.
Those are bad, sad people that something weird probably happened to them.
Oh yeah.
And I see those people and I want to just kind of go up to them more and just be like, hey, you know, like, let's take that off. Let's have a chat, you know? But this is just me talking from the kitchen. If I actually walked into the Walmart and saw that shit, I might just go crazy too, you know? I can't guarantee my reaction is going to be this righteous, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just having a nice morning. But say if I was in some traffic, it was hard to park, it was raining, I walked in wet or something, and then I saw those people.
No, I don't know. They want a confrontation, obviously, which is kind of crazy because...
So what's the alternative confrontation I can give them?
You mean besides a pipe upside the head?
Yeah. Like what?
Okay, what they actually deserve?
No. This is. I've thought about this when this situation came up on the news. I was like, what could I do in that situation to be funny to make them look like shit? Like that didn't involve like physical. Like what? Because my instinct was like, what if you just walked up to those people and just went like, aw, sweetie, were you not getting enough attention today?
Right.
You know, like, can you do that? Is that funny?
That is the only thing you could actually do. And they're not going to get it. And they're not going to think it's funny. And it's not going to cure them or help them in any way. So maybe it'll embarrass them a little bit because they don't get the confrontation.
Right.
But they're
they just like look stupid. They don't get the confrontation. They don't get what they want.
Right.
Or is the best thing just straight up ignoring those people?
I would think that it not only ignoring them, but also like ignoring them to the point where the cashier maybe should ignore them, you know?
Right.
Like,
oh, right.
If you walk up to the Walmart to cash out and pay for whatever you've got and you're wearing a swastika, I think the duty of the cashier is to close the register and walk away. That's like the duty of every American. It's like It is to ignore them, but to basically proactively ignore them.
Right.
Not to confront them, not to like yell at them, not to hit them, but to not give them anything. To basically make it clear to them that they're not part of society. They've chosen to, because you know, freedom of speech, I'm a big believer, but there's a line that you cross where you're just saying, like, I hate you, and it's not okay. It's not okay.
Well, if you wear that, you're saying, hey, I want to murder your family.
Yeah, basically, that's exactly what they're saying.
Yeah. It's probably not that cool.
Yeah.
But it's like, so if these people want attention, so, like, say with Trump, for instance, I blocked him on Twitter, like, 3 years ago.
Right.
Because I thought the best response to a guy like that is no more clicks, not one more impression, not one more piece of ad revenue to like add to that whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, that was like my whole concept. And it's kind of like the, you know, I don't know if you did acid in your time in the 60s, but, you know, it's part of the whole Timothy Leary thing. It's like the whole, tune in, drop, you know, whatever it is, drop in, tune out. What is it again?
Tune in, drop out, I think.
Yeah, tune in, drop out. It wasn't just like do drugs and go to another place. It was the idea that like politics was like theater. And right. all they did was like feed on, you know, like we're feeding the actual machine with what it needs to keep its gears going.
Absolutely.
And that if you completely drop out of the process and ignore the fact that it's even like a thing, then maybe it'll cease being a thing like eventually.
Right.
I mean, it's, you know, maybe not the most proactive approach. He also had Richard Nixon's vice president, the great Spiro Agnew, on his tail at that time, you know, but I don't know. I think there's some truth to that, but there's when it's in front of your face, it's so hard to reconcile that, you know, it's like, it's like, I just want to murder this person, but me being physically violent with them is kind of like exactly what they were asking for by wearing it in the first place. I'm kind of giving them what they want.
Yeah.
It's like killing Kevin Spacey at the end of Seven. You know?
I don't remember that movie. I don't think I even saw that movie.
Yeah. He had to let him live. Brad Pitt lost his shit. He saw his wife's head in a box. He said, no! What is this? No! No! One of the worst scenes ever. And then he shoots Kevin Spacey. It was part of his master plan. Okay. You know? So if these people are going to Walmart being like, yo, I want a viral video that's going to go on OAR or whatever. And, you know, a bunch of fucking rednecks are going to think I'm cool.
Right.
And then I provide them that content like, oh, look at this big brutish liberal all wearing black who assaulted these free speech patriots. I give them exactly what they want.
Yeah. You know, you do. I mean, there's no way we could ever do this here. But, you know, I know that in some Asian countries, I think in Japan is one of them. They never print the names of criminals in the paper.
Mm.
And especially like, you know, kind of the more extreme crime, you know, like murder, like you just don't, they don't acknowledge, they're not going to give them, because essentially over here, I mean, that's what terrorism is. And that's really what, you know, a lot of crimes that happen, you know, anything that's not like burglary, you know, it's kind of attention seeking. You know,
a lot of it, and
you shouldn't give them the time of day. Don't give them what they want.
Well, this was a nice tangent to start this interview. I was so psyched to get this interview with Bartice.
Yeah,
I've only discovered him fairly recently. I think most people have, but I heard those first couple tracks, and it's just like, you know, my ears sprouted up. It's just like, oh,
yeah,
here's something. This is something. And then I looked into like his story a little, and really just like a fascinating guy in a lot of ways, like the way he came up and the way he wound up where he is now, and kind of his philosophy is real. It's cool. It's like a mellow philosophy.
He's a wholesome dude for sure.
Yeah. I'm into it. And sometimes we walk away from interviews and I'm like, can I just like keep texting this dude and be friends with him?
Yeah.
Because that was fun. You know, that was a conversation I'd like to have again. So, his record is coming out soon in October, but he's doing a lot of previews. He just released that single Boomer, which is awesome. And everyone should check him out. But first, check out this interview we did with him. It's going on track! What, you don't use Aloe?
Yeah, dude, I'm a big Aloe fan. I'm down with Aloe.
I'm a big Aloe fan.
Hey!
Hi! I mean, this is what we're talking about. We're talking about Aloe.
Big Aloe? The industry?
It's like
and how they're coming together to how they've created COVID to take us all out to make us buy more aloe.
Oh my god! How did you know,
bruh? When Jamie said y'all wanted to talk, I was like, I hope they're talking aloe. Or yeah, you've not been on, gonna go well.
You've been on Reddit or something, huh?
Man, too much, dog. I have too much time right now, you know. So it's not all of it is being spent well, you know.
No, I'm
seeking the truth, you know.
It's funny though, isn't it? Like if you came on here and told me, you know what, Benny? Like big aloe is a problem, and and like you know, in whatever country they produce a lot of aloe, and that the local population is suffering because of our love of aloe. I don't know. I believe it because it seems to be happening every time we are into anything. I remember when like quinoa became a thing. Apparently, after like 6 months, like Peruvians were just getting fucking killed over quinoa.
Yo, almond milk.
I'm
like, yo, I'm black and I'm lactose intolerant, like a lot of black people.
Okay.
So when I found out that, you know, about oat milk and almond milk, I was like, yo, this is the wave. Like, this tastes delicious and it's amazing. And then, like, you know, I also work in the environmental space. So all of a sudden, like, everyone was like, oh, almond milk, like people in South America are being killed and making these almonds. And I was like, damn. I did all the slavery, 400 years of that, and then lactose intolerance, and then I found something that worked, and now I can't use it. It felt like double oppression from both sides. It was like,
back to lactate. Back to lactate for you, motherfucker.
Yeah. I was like, I was forced into this. I didn't choose to be lactose intolerant. I didn't choose for these options.
I was unaware of this.
You don't know anything about this, Brad?
The almond terror I was not aware of.
I mean, what's going on with oats? I know almonds are bad because apparently California has no water.
Boom, that's it.
And it takes a ton of water to make almonds.
Right.
What's going on with oats? What's wrong with oats?
I'm afraid to ask. I'm afraid. I don't even want to Google it because it's going to mess me up. I can't do it.
You know there's someone on Reddit who's like, yo, if you're eating oats, you're fucking Hitler.
Oh, come on.
Those oats, they look kind of like, you know, people knuckles.
But so are you into the oat milk then? Because that's the best thing I've found outside of milk, right?
I'm into it.
And they make an oat milk. Actually.
There's an oat milk ice cream now.
Yeah, I bet it's good. Ooh. I like oat milk.
Oh, it's hard.
Yeah, there's nothing bad about oat milk. Come on.
So speaking of stomach problems, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing? Yeah. I'm guessing this is Benny talking now.
I'm Benny, the one with the slight lisp, who sounds like he's really from New Jersey, is probably me. And then, Brad, what would your accent be?
At this point, I don't know. Do I have an accent?
Are you? Powerful. You're kind of. You have kind of a non-regional diction.
You know that I've lived in many parts of the country, and I at one point actually had a southern accent when I was like 6 years old. I lived in Oklahoma when I was in first grade and kindergarten.
You did?
Get out of here.
Yeah. And, and then I moved to New England, and I've had friends say that when I first moved up there that I had a southern accent. Which
You know what's funny about this, Bartiz, is that Brad does such little research for these interviews that he has no idea how connected you are with Oklahoma, and that was a natural segue, a truly natural one.
Yeah, I'm just here.
Did you hear me? I was like, what?
Yeah, you're like, for real? Oklahoma? All right. Summer?
What's the connect?
I was raised there.
Oh, where?
Where? Mustang, Oklahoma.
Okay, I was in Enid.
Oh shit! Yep. I played in a semi-state semifinal football game against Enid High School and we got mollywopped. It was bad. Those boys are huge, man. Good Lord.
Yeah, I was. I left there when I was just a kid. I had first grade there and kindergarten there, and then we split.
What years of your life were you actually in Oklahoma? Because you moved quite a bit before that, right?
Yeah, it was like fourth, fifth grade through like junior year of college.
Oh, yeah. Wow, developing years, yeah. Man.
Yeah, I mean,
so do you consider yourself like an Oklahoman?
An Okie?
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, I'm definitely. I have like all these Oklahoma tattoos. It's super corny. Yeah, I'm like a Okie for sure.
Now, like, what would, in your estimation, be like a determining factor of someone from Oklahoma, like a personality trait or like something that's very like Oklahoman?
Something that's very Oklahoman.
Owning a gun?
Well, that's too easy. Like, that's like...
Sorry.
And that can be said about the region at large.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think uniquely Oklahoman. I'm trying to think, what is a characteristic that's uniquely Oklahoman? Oklahomans, I feel like I can spot them out of a crowd because Oklahomans, I hope an Oklahoman hears this podcast so they can verify. I'm gonna share the shit out of this.
Yeah.
But I feel like we carry this sensibility of like, oh, we don't fit in. Like we think that we don't fit in. And everyone else is like, oh, you're fine. And we're like, no, you don't know what it's like. Like I feel like that's like a weirdly Oklahoman thing. Like just as an energy. because it's like it's strangely placed and like the South doesn't quite claim us. The Midwest doesn't quite claim us. The West doesn't really know about us. And the East Coast is like, doesn't know even where we are on a map. So,
yeah. And Texas is kind of just resentful.
Yeah. Texas hates Oklahoma, right? Isn't there like a rivalry there?
It's a huge rivalry. Hatred. Texas hates us. Yeah. Oklahoma always has something to prove. That's what it is. Our energy is we're like, hell no, we're from Oklahoma. And everyone's like, cool.
So you're like the New Jersey of America.
Oh my God.
That sounds right. Yeah. You're just that naturally would, defensive.
There
yes.
you go. Yeah. We're coming out swinging. Like no reason needed. You know,
that's really funny.
Wow. That's beautiful. I love that. It also makes me realize why I love Philip Roth so much. So it's beautiful. Beautiful. Pastoral.
Now, before you got to Oklahoma, you were part of a military family, right? So you moved quite a bit.
Yeah, I was born in England and moved to Germany and moved to Greenland, and then I moved to the States and bounced around the States for a while, and eventually ended up in Mustang.
And do you remember all that moving? Do you remember those places, or is your memory pretty entrenched in Oklahoma?
I remember living in Europe.
You did.
And people ask me like, oh, did that happen in England or Germany? And I'm like, well, that was all just a place to me. Air Force bases are also their own little like insular like culture, like living on base.
I see.
And all that, you know, it's like, you know, everyone speaks English and everyone is like very it's a very international feeling though. Like, you know, it's a lot of different types of people from all over the world, definitely from all over the States. You know, it's interesting. Yeah. I remember that because I definitely remember when I moved to Oklahoma, and I remember how different it was from everything I'd seen previously. I was like, whoa, this is wild. You know, it really stood out.
In what way was it so unique from the experience you had?
Well, I mean, like generally Oklahoma is a very conservative, state, you know, like deeply conservative, very, very Christian, which, you know, isn't horrible for my family. I mean, my mom is like a holy roller, super Christian, like Southern black woman, which is like honestly where I learned how to like play every instrument and sing.
Right.
It was like churches. Yeah. But, yeah, you know, it's hard to like, A, be a black person, B, be queer or be interested in like, you know, anything other than like a woman of the opposite, a person of the opposite sex.
Yeah.
You know, it was hard to, you know, do things that were like ambitious, people would like try to smush you, you know, like as soon as you're like the black kid that's trying to do stuff, like think back, just shit happens to you. You know, you become like, you know, I've known many people, some really close friends who were like run out of town for being great at football or being great at, you know, you're too big, too young. Like people pick all these crazy reasons to go after black kids, you know, and their lives hell. And it's really rough. And, you know, me and my brother and sister, you know, when we moved there, we just really like banded together and just like got through it, you know?
That's awesome. And what's the age difference with you guys?
We're all 2 years apart.
Oh, cool. Perfect.
Yeah. So that was us three going to all those all white schools and just fighting kids and and going to football practice. And my mom is an opera singer. And so, you know, she had us like singing and she taught at the University of Oklahoma, the vocal department. And yeah, that was our life. It was an interesting period.
At what point, if any, did you ever like settle into it, or did you always feel that restlessness until you got out?
Oh, wow. That's an interesting question because it's not how you think. Like, I bought in immediately. Like, one thing that I learned growing up was like, I think I was always like a scared kid. Like, I was scared of everything. So I got really good at just fitting in. So, like, if everyone was playing basketball, I'm going to be the best basketball player here. I'm going to learn everything about it and I'm going to play the fuck out of basketball. And, you know, that's what I did my whole life. Like, and when I moved to Mustang, I just had to like adapt and just play the part. And my part was like Booby Miles, Friday Night Lights. Like that was like who I was in my mind. And, you know, did all the church stuff and played ball. And
well, then you would have been the preacher at Friday Night Lights, not Booby.
Well, I was like Booby because I was trying to be cool, man. I was I was trying to be really cool. And and then like once I got hurt in college playing football, and I was like, I really want to do music more, honestly. And I want to know what it's like to be like a civilian and like not be playing sports like every day for years. Sure. And I also knew that there's this other side of me that I was never in a place that I could let go, you know? And even though I always played music growing up and, you know, always had a lot of access to the arts through my mom, my dad's really supportive, you know, I just never let myself go there. You know, I'd just be like, no, you will literally get fucked up for being that person.
Right.
So I just didn't until I, you know, got out and then it was like,
So you're supposed to be the kid who plays football, the kid who goes to church, acts cool around everyone else, but that wasn't really what you actually were at the time.
Yeah, and it's also like just scary as fuck. Like it wasn't about like being popular. It was about like, yo, people are getting tied up in drug behind trucks until they die out here. What I mean? Like it wasn't about being cool. It was about like there's like the Grandmaster Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan that lived in the acreage behind my house. That's like insane. When I was a package helper for UPS, this white boy I used to ride with, every time we got to his house, he'd make me get out of the car and walk the package up to the door. Really? Like it was a joke. You know, like,
yeah, like thinking it was funny.
Yeah, man, this shit was horrifying. Like the most traumatizing shit. And, yeah, I really had to get out of there and just did whatever I had to do to get out of there. So I went to college there and interned, you know, I just busted my ass. And when I got a little internship in DC, I was like, peace. and like started playing in a lot of bands. And then that was kind of how I wrote it.
Now, with that kind of situation going on in Oklahoma, I heard you were into punk and hardcore, went to shows, played in bands. Like, how did you get an entrance into that world in such a?
This is fun to talk about. Cool. So this is the cool part about living in Oklahoma, sure, right?
Yeah.
All right. So nobody knows this, but Oklahoma has some sick ass musicians, like some of the hardest, like Garth. I grew up on Garth Brooks Boulevard. Literally, Garth Brooks' parents live like on my mom and dad's street. Look that shit up. Garth Brooks Boulevard heading into Mustang Road. I grew up on that street and fucking man, like great players all over the place. And like, even if you look out there now, you got like John Moreland, Samantha Crane, John Calvin Abney, like some of the coldest up and coming, like folky country players out. And so like, I felt like I got to grow up around a lot of people who were just like really, really hyper musical, but we lived in a place where nobody thought you were going to go anywhere with the shit. So people were just chill about being great at music. And so you could sit down with some 60-year-old redneck, literally just chicken picking the shit out of a guitar on his stoop and just be like, hey, how are you doing that? And he would just show you. Like,
there are multiple
people throughout my development who were just like random people that just took an interest and shared their knowledge, you know? So I met a lot of people like that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, like being around my mom and just kind of being curious, right? And then when I got to high school, people started like joining bands and, you know, I was really into rock music, but I didn't see any other black kids playing like around me. And like right before high school, I guess seventh, eighth grade, I was watching like TV, literally the corniest thing in the world, but I saw like At the Drive-In playing on Letterman and I taped it. And like, it was a rerun, and I was like, oh, my God, where are they from?
One Arm Scissor, I presume?
Yes, it was. It was that one. Yeah. And I found out they're from El Paso, Texas.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, my God, what? Like, those kids look kind of like me, and they all speak Spanish, and they're, like, in New York City playing on television. It just, like, brain exploded. And then, like, this dude showed me TV on the radio and that really fucked me up. And then I heard like Helicopter by Block Party on FIFA or some shit.
It was on FIFA. Yeah. I've heard that song good 350 times too, I think, because of that. Yeah.
And so like that really just got me looking around. Like I was like, who is making shit like this? And then like, also, there was like a substitute teacher at my school who's like nephew is Caleb from Kings of Leon. Like those guys are like also from my area. And like I heard they were playing like literally like a show in Bricktown and a bunch of my friends were going. And like we all went and saw like, you know, like the bands of Oklahoma at that time. I don't even remember who they were playing.
Right.
It was really sick. But that was kind of my entry into like, oh, like you can just form a band and do this. And you don't have to look like them and you can do your thing. And that really just like lit a fire in me. And then I was just like always trying to play in a band. And in high school, like I was playing football and basketball and all this shit, but I always was like in a band and like, always like slugging it out, like with some folks in the city and like just going to punk shows and, you know, trying to like, just like see if there's anyone like me because I saw it on TV, literally, you know, I was like, where's another couple black kids? And I met some, and we're still friends to this day. They're the bomb.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And what were your first bands?
That I fell in love with or that I
played? No, that you were in. Like,
My God. Okay.
Give me some names. Yeah, give me some
bands. There's a band called Belmont, which is named after, you know, my neighborhood, Belmont Crossings, when I was growing up.
Not the horse race.
not the horse race. But we've definitely got a MySpace, and there's definitely, definitely music on it, which is wild. You could find it if you wanted. Beyond that, I played in a band called Tander or Die, which now goes by the name Speak Memory. I'm actually mixing their record right now. Longtime friends of mine. Run by this dude named Tim Miller, who like, I think he's like, if you're into like Twinkle Daddy music or like Midwestern emo, like this dude like really studies it, and he's just like, he's really talented as a guitarist and a arranger. Yeah, it's his project, and I played bass in it, and it was a lot of fun. And I also played in a band called An Airbag Saved My Life, which was a post-rock band that I played in like a lot in college. And it was a very emotional post-rock band. There's music up. I'm sure you could find that music. It's great.
Now, were you just playing guitar in these bands? You were singing too.
I was always just playing guitar. I was too scared.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, even though like, so, you know, your mom, as you mentioned, is an opera singer.
And also, I'd assume, since in your words, a holy roller probably probably did some work in church. So I mean, so you must have known that you had a voice. Did you have vocal like training from your mom or?
Yeah, and you know, I grew up singing quite often, but singing in my own band was like a different thing. Like, I remember, like, you know, I grew up doing operas with my, you know, my mom had a little, literally like a kid's opera camp in Oklahoma called the Cimarron Circuit Opera Company, where every summer we would do like full blown out, like opera productions and operettas, Gilbert and Sullivan pieces. And I would sing and I did church and I was always, you know, my whole family were always singing in, you know, in front of people. But with, it was like, as I got older though, you know, and started playing in bands, it just felt too real. Like if I was playing and singing, I was almost like afraid of it because I loved it like so much. Like it was too big.
Almost like you had a unattainable standard on it.
Well, like I felt like I didn't have time to be too into that. Like I was like, as I was playing music, I was trying to like stay connected to music, but I was definitely in my mind fully focused on like getting out of Oklahoma and finding a job and being this person that I have been told my whole life that I needed to be, right? I was like a black kid who grew up in the country and like, you know, I wanted to like be a fancy black guy. Like this was like Obama era shit. Like
I see,
you know, I wanted to like move to DC and be like a fancy black dude that worked at a firm or something.
Gotcha.
Like, and I loved hardcore music and I was like, oh my God, hardcore music's great. Boom, boom, boom. But I'll never be that. There's no way I could possibly ever make it. And this is like a way for me to get out of Oklahoma. So like, this is where I'm going to like pour into. But when I moved to DC, like, things worked out and I had some really great jobs and I hated all of them. And I always wanted to be in a band.
And what kind of work was it? Like, are you an academic? Like what kind of stuff did you get into?
No, actually, my first job, I was actually like a technology policy lobbyist. I worked on net neutrality.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah. It was really awesome. It was a good experience. Yeah. I worked there and eventually worked at the FCC. I was the deputy press secretary there.
Wow.
Doing like, a bunch of their net neutrality work with Tom Wheeler, who was the chair when Obama appointed him.
And, wow, very interesting.
And it was funny. Like I chose DC because of that work, but I was also like, oh, there's bands there. I'll always be able to kind of like find a band. But I had a really hard time. Like I couldn't find anyone to play with. And I felt like starved, like kind of creatively. Wow. And I hated my job. I hated it. Like I was like, I thought this was going to be fulfilling, but the only thing I want to do is play in bands.
Wow.
So I'm going to move to New York and play in bands.
So you finished, school, you finished college and got a background in that, went to DC and kind of tinkered around with it. And it just, you just knew it wasn't right for you. Like pretty early on.
Yeah, it just didn't feel right at all. And I always knew I wanted to play in bands. So I moved to New York and still worked, but music became like the focal point, really.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And what kind of stuff did you fall into? And where were you in Brooklyn when you were there?
I was in Crown Heights.
You're in Crown Heights.
Yeah.
And what was that like for you, connecting yourself in Brooklyn?
Man, it was like, half of my like record coming out is about this moment. Like when I moved to Brooklyn, I had never, for one, I felt like it was the first decision I ever made in my life that was totally mine.
Like, oh, cool. Yeah.
You know, like it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to DC because I got a job and it's the next thing. It was like, I don't want that life. I want this other life. I want to try it. You know, like it, I felt responsible for it. And then when I got to Brooklyn, and I'll be honest, like it was my first time living in like a all black and like super pro black like world.
Sure.
And I'd never experienced that in Oklahoma. And when I was in DC, I was just in a very different circle.
Okay.
And so like, but there, you know, like it was like just all these black people, and I'd never been in a world like that, and I was suddenly like forced to like learn about myself and like really like become like just like more confident in who I am, and start to kind of like ask myself some questions about what I want my life to be and what really makes me happy. Who are the people I want to be around? You know, things like that, that I never really actually thought that much about. I don't know. I felt like I picked up a lot of confidence and became myself in Brooklyn in a way. Yeah.
It's a strange question coming from a white person, but like, was this between Oklahoma and DC? Was this maybe the first time that you were able to like connect with your own black experience, like being around that and really fully being able to kind of let that free in an open area like that?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It was like, I think of it as like an actualization.
Right.
Like, oh, it's okay to be this. Or to, you know, and that's when I was like, okay, I want to front a band now.
You know? Right. You know, like,
my own fucking band. And then, I played in so many bands in New York, and it was like, I just got to really grind, and I needed that, you know, like,
yes.
to just like play like 4 shows a week and sure. practice all the time. It was just amazing.
Well, it seems like you need to work hard at whatever you're doing, which is, you know, a good quality to have. Now, I heard you say one quote when you moved there and when in the attempt to go solo, you said, I had to say goodbye to being so precious and I had to say goodbye to that version of me. So what exactly were you letting go, and like what exactly were you like coming into?
I feel like that's so, yo, you did your research. That's great. Damn, you got me. But no, I feel like when I was coming out of that, I had always had this idea of like who I was supposed to be, right? Through like just growing, you know, whatever.
Was that from family or just the Oklahoma thing? Was there pressure from your parents to kind of comply a little bit as well?
Well, I think I was like, I'm a person that puts a lot of pressure on themselves, to be honest. Like, you know, my parents have expectations and I have my, you know, but I think I have my own, and I think those drive me more crazy than anybody else's, to be honest. You know, I feel like I just had this idea of what I thought life was going to be and who I thought I wanted to be. And when I realized that wasn't what I wanted and that I wanted to move and kind of pursue this other like world, I had to say goodbye to like, honestly, like wanting a lot of shit that it just didn't make me happy. Like wanting a lot of like, oh, like I don't need to like, you know, stunt on niggas. To be like, I don't need to like be cool. Like, I don't need to like, you know, I don't need to play the role. Like,
I see.
I need to like make myself happy. Like, even if it doesn't look cool, even if it's like, just like, you know, you're a dub. Like, what if you're just a dub? Like, you're not that interesting. Like,
yeah,
it's okay. Like, you got to say goodbye to being so precious and like caring about these things that aren't really serving you, you know, and that was kind of what that was all about.
That's awesome. That sounds really cathartic, almost, the things you went through in all these places. And it's nice to hear like music and, you know, performance and art being so connected to a personal experience. 'Cause so often, you know, it's about the end game and it's not really about the process. So it's honestly nice to hear that it was about the process. You know, I have to bring it up at least once. No, when you played football, you were a free safety and a wideout. So
yeah.
you got burners, huh? Like,
oh man, I used to be able to get out. I was a great athlete. Yo, I was a great athlete, and it's so weird because like there was a time in my life in my early 20s when I seriously was bummed that I was not playing football on TV. Like, I remember thinking, like, damn, I could be playing for blah, blah, blah. Why am I wasting my time in school? So dumb, man. Like, yo.
When you were getting out of high school, were you being looked at by colleges and stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, I got a scholarship to play football at Emporia State University. I went there and played, and then I didn't like it. I got hurt, and then I was like, I went to Emporia State for a girl, which was, you know, not smart, because I turned down like some better schools.
Okay,
much to my parents, like, what the fuck? Okay. But anyways, I planned to transfer to Oklahoma and play, you know, walk on at Oklahoma or get like a gray shirt there. Sure. But then the injury was, I don't know. It was just time. I was like, no, I don't want to go there.
What kind of injury was it?
My knee. I've got a bad knee, a right knee. My ACL, I've torn it, and my MCL, I've probably torn it twice.
Sure.
Yeah. So I've got a bum knee, a real one that I can't really fuck up again. So.
Yeah. Young man with a bum knee. Well,
yo, for real.
Well, you're getting bigger and bigger, man. Once your shows start popping off, you got to make sure that you're not doing any full-on split dives and cool jumps on stage, you know? That's an easy way to fuck it up in some flat shoes, you know?
Man, real talk. That's so real. I know I'm going to throw my back out at a show. It's going to happen.
This is from experience. I've seen men creeping up into their 30s try to do some. Let's just say this. I've seen a lot of guys holding guitars complaining about like shin splints and shit like that, you know? Just keep that in mind now.
Benny.
Especially with his knee.
You're hanging out with some wussy players, dude.
Oh, you never had a shin splint when you were in the Goops, bro?
No, man. Come on. And if I did, I wouldn't admit it. How's that?
Well, yeah, because this is New York City in like the 80s. You were probably so high on cocaine that you didn't even know how your body felt, Brad.
Nah. I'll let the fantasy. I'll let you live that fantasy.
Your voice just got real jumpy when I said that. But so, anyway, Barti, so you're down in D.C. now, right? And you told me you're in the U Street district.
Yeah, so what brought you back to D.C.? I mean, we were just in New York, and you'd found yourself, and you'd found music. So what happened?
Yo, okay. So this is when I think I got smart, like, out of nowhere.
Okay.
I feel like I got smart. And I was like, yo, I don't think – if I stay in New York, anyone's going to hear my music.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was like, like, I know a lot of great bands. Like, I know some incredible bands. I know some players that are so good. Like, anything they touch, it seems like they can write a hit song. But nobody's going to their shows.
Right.
They're not selling any merch.
Right.
And, like, they're ultimately pissed off and frustrated. Mm. And I was like, every time I'd go on tour, I would meet all these bands that were like sometimes more talented and sometimes not, that just kind of built their lives differently around their music. You know, like they were like, they're like, yo, like I can't spend $2,200 on an apartment. I'm going to spend $700 on an apartment and live in Valparaiso and tour all year. and it worked. And when they come to New York, they sell out. And I was like, I gotta leave and build this elsewhere in a place where maybe someone will see me.
So like, how much time did you put in New York? I'm just curious.
Oh, it was like five years. Yeah. Okay. Just about.
Oh, that's respectable. Yeah. There's this, I've lived in New York for like 3 decades now. And I just know that there's this two year mark where a lot of people who can't handle it leave. So once you pass that, you could handle it. So you could handle it. You just had reasons to leave.
I miss it too. Like I am always talking to my partner. I'm like, babe, should we just go back? All of our friends are there. You know, I miss the life and I miss the players. Like, gosh, it's like the best. But I
mean, you couldn't be more right about the music. I mean, like, it's so hard building something inside of New York. And it seems like most of the people who find the success find success outside of New York. And once that happens, you sort of come back home and have success at home. But I mean, when you say that, it makes perfect sense. Cause I've seen the same as you, so many great bands just grind in places, especially in Brooklyn, where people are just too cool to hear it.
Yeah.
Too young to care.
yep. too drunk to notice.
Yep.
And then about 15,000 other bands you're competing with, that it's really hard to stand out. So that does seem like a very wise decision.
I just made a risk assessment. I was, like, this is where my best shot is, I think. And yeah.
This might have been your kind of more mathematical engineering side of your brain that you got from your initial career that led you to see these holes, you know, in the sociology of New York.
I hope so. I don't. I like to think so. Yeah. I like to think that time wasn't wasted.
Listen, if you were a total lunkhead, you wouldn't have made that decision. So that's good. Now, did you go straight to the U Street area?
No, and I live on H Street. My bad. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, no, okay. I live on H Street. And yeah, I just moved straight here. We've been here for almost 2 years.
Awesome. I think.
Yeah.
And there's kind of a long, rich history in that area. Do you find the neighborhood and your surroundings inspiring to work and write?
It was when I first moved here, but now I'm ready to try another spot.
Okay. But why is that?
I don't know. Well, there's a few things. One, in the continued effort to build my life around my music and to cut costs and make things affordable and sustainable, you know, this isn't the best spot for that. Right. And I also just got a, like, you know, a position, working as a producer out of a studio here, like right outside of DC in Virginia. That's like really great. And the studio is amazing. And, you know, basically they're just like, yeah, set up shop, bring in whoever you want. And, you know, don't worry about an X amount you have to pay, you know, pretty great little, yeah, it's great. So, you know, so I want to be a little closer to that, especially now, like during COVID and shit, like,
sure.
So it's a lot cheaper over there. So, you know, I think it'll be like a good place to kind of get low and build, if you will, you know, like just kinda,
I like that.
Yeah, just grind.
I saw the pics on your. I saw the pics on your Instagram. What's this studio?
Oh, it's called 38 North.
38 yeah. North. It looks like a nice spot. What town is it in?
It's in Falls Church.
Okay.
Yeah, it's which is like right. It's in that Nova area, like right outside of DC.
Right.
Really
right.
close. Yeah.
Brad, did you approve of the gear?
I didn't. I was going to say this is for. I have a question for Benny. I was just wondering what the console is.
So downstairs is an MCI, ooh. A 500 series. It's cold, bro.
Nice.
Like it's beautiful. And upstairs, in the big room, I can send you some photos. I don't think I posted any great ones. But upstairs, there's like, you know, basically like a rack of 1073s, 1066s, rack of API, you know, it's like a rack of everything right, you would want. A rack of Ventex, you know, LA2As, a bunch of UA stuff, you know, but a really nice combination of like vintage and new things. And so they don't use a board upstairs. They just use all that.
Right. Well, you can get away with that now. Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think, Ben? Does it sound good to you?
Sounds great. Yeah. Yeah. I would definitely knock down the 1.5 HZ and, you know, a little bit just in that kind of scenario. But yeah, it sounds good. Sounds
1.5 hertz? Is that a...
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you notice some reflections in the pictures?
Yeah, the HZ, you know?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
You might be right.
A lot of HZ.
Yeah.
So much.
Yeah. And you just, you know, knock a couple HZs out of the mids.
That's a good idea, actually. Low mids. That's a good idea.
I'm always like, yo, whose HZs are these? Get them out of here. Am I right?
All right. Well, speaking of mids, this is the perfect transition into our segment called Mystery Friend.
Who did you piss off?
Yeah.
Who did you offend? Were you late to the game? Did you show up at the end? Put on your thinking caps.
Okay. So.
Oh, cool. I thought you were going to talk about weed when you said mids.
Oh, we are. we are, friend. Yeah, that is what I meant by mids. Yeah. Oh. So I heard a story from a friend of yours. So the point of this game is I'm going to tell you a story. I'd like you to tell me a little more about the story.
To elaborate on it.
And then you have to guess which mystery friend of yours told me this story.
Oh, my.
So...
Okay.
Speaking of mids and Washington, D.C., I heard about a story where you took someone to get weed in D.C. and they found out that it was sort of like a strange speakeasy type of situation where you had to kind of know the right place or the right code words to get it. So can you explain to me what that is like down in D.C.?
Yeah. So in D.C., that you can't buy weed, but someone can gift you weed and you can, like, you know, buy a service and they gift you the weed, right? So I go to a place down the street and I walk in and I say, hey, I need some life advice. And they say, okay, cool. That's going to be $60. And I'm like, okay, cool. I'll give you $60 for life advice.
Yeah.
And I give them $60. They give me advice. It lifts me up. I feel good. And then they say, hey, brother, do you want a free gift of like an eighth of this or that or the other? And I can choose whatever I want within a certain price point of the advice I received.
Wow.
And that's how you are legally able to procure, you know, marijuana in the district.
Oh my God, I never heard this.
Like, there's people selling like paintings. Yo, check. Okay. There is, it's so wild to me. So there's like this collection of, I believe they're deaf artists, because there is a college here, Gallaudet University, one of the largest schools for the deaf in the country, probably in the world. And they have like these artists who like paint pictures and you can buy them and then they deliver the painting to you with weed.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's lit. And the paintings are all named after like the strain you'd be getting.
Oh, so it's my like, God, this is too good.
But let me ask you this. When you get your life advice, do they ever take it seriously? Did you ever get any good life advice other than...
Oh, my gosh. I've gotten some... It's all very general, but it's all very true, you know?
Okay.
Like, recently I was told not to sweat the small shit, you know? Like,
okay. That's always a good thing.
Which is something that, prior to hearing it, I hadn't thought to myself in probably 48 hours. So it was a good reminder. And I didn't that day.
So you're kind of, it's sort of like fortune cookie advice.
Yeah, but better because it's a guy that you get to build a relationship with over time. Right. He gets to know your problems, you know?
I like it's great. This.
It's almost like a Shrike.
It is. It's a therapist.
It's like a variation on the old school bartender, right? You sit down and tell your problems to.
Exactly.
I like this. I was not aware of this. It's fantastic.
I mean, granted, you're in line with a lot of people behind you. So,
right.
How deep do you want to go? That's up to you.
Sure.
But, you know, whatever.
That's amazing.
See, this is when everybody goes, you know, 2020. And sometimes I go, 2020, man. You know? Like, could be worse. Like, that's cool. That shit's cool. You know?
It's really funny. But damn, who told you that?
Yeah. So you have any idea who gifted me this story? Who's your mystery friend?
Is it my mother?
I mean, you got to imagine this scenario. I must have talked to the person who I got this from. So would you imagine that I could have gotten in touch with your mom somehow?
Yes. I mean, she's online.
It's not your mom.
And I don't know you.
I know. This was not an easy mystery friend to get.
Donovan? Is it Donovan?
It's not.
Because I've told a lot of people about this.
Oh, I love this.
Oh, hell. Is it Kaylee?
No.
My God. Shoot. A human being that I've talked to.
I think it's not only a human being you've talked to. I think it's a human being you brought to do this. I think you supervised this human being.
Damn it.
In the speakeasy.
This sucks because I'm high when I do everything. So it's like everything is hard.
I hear you.
You know I'm high right now trying to figure this out.
That's going off track prerequisite.
Don't feel too pressured. Only about half the people get their mystery friends.
Let me know.
Let me know when you want to get it.
I do not know who it is.
It is your publicist, Jamie Collette.
Oh my God. I'm so stupid.
Which is the only person that I know that you know.
Well, damn, I gave you way too much credit, basically.
Yeah. Yep.
I was like, that'd be too easy. I was like, Benny's a professional podcaster. Like, he's got research. He's been planning for this for weeks. He just pulled that line in that article out of thin air.
Now, this was emailing your publicist at about 11 o'clock last night.
Damn.
But it still worked.
Yeah.
This is a snapshot of what many interactions in my life are like. What just happened.
Why? That my attempt at you was more artificial than you thought? You thought there was more depth to me?
No, that I vastly overthought something. that I'm in a place that no one else is. Yeah. I'm beyond.
Yeah, there's my life lesson to you is go the easy route first. If that doesn't work, you can go deeper.
Twist the doorknob first.
Yeah.
That's seriously the best advice anyone could probably ever give me.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good advice. That's solid.
I like that one. I've heard many variations on that one, but that's it.
Well, that was a great mystery, friend. Thanks for that.
No problem.
But so moving on to actually some music, okay? I know you like to play and write music as part of all of this. What kind of what kind of creator are you? Are you somebody who like makes sure that you grind every day and make sure you create something, or are you very tied to creative inspiration and when you're hit with like a wave of something?
I like to think of this as a spectrum, sure. Right? Like, cause I definitely have element. I do some of both. I'm a planner. Like when I'm about to go make a record or record a record, I'm pretty like technical, you know. I'm pretty like, all right, cool, here's the timeline, here's this, boom boom boom, like I need to have a strategy for the record. But if I'm just like day to day writing music and just kind of like trying to just be creative, I feel like I'm an inspiration searcher, you know. That's where most of my music comes from. Definitely it's rare that I think up a whole song. Most of my music is from like hearing something or doing something accidentally and then just kind of like following it, you know? Which is also why I buy so much gear. Like,
oh, I see.
Yeah. Like I love synths. I love guitars. I love basses. I love drums. And it's literally like, I just need to like hear something different so I can just go down the pathway, and I can't imagine it until I hear it. So I need to have things to make sounds with.
That makes sense. Anything like outside of, you know, other artists or gear that you use for inspiration, like, you know, film or things around the city or anything like that?
Honestly, I love horror movies.
Nice.
I love the drama and I love the sound. The drama that sound can bring, something about it, you know, I've always loved it. I love horror movies. I'm often very inspired by them, how they can, you know, make hyper real scenarios feel so like much like it could happen to you. Like I feel something about that is always kind of been romantic to me, like, and kind of interesting. I've always like played with that idea, and yeah, so I think that's always been very inspiring to
me. What's a favorite film
recently? A film that has just stood out to me, it's not even my favorite, but it's one that I come back to a lot for inspiration, is It Follows. Yeah, I don't know if you've seen it or heard of it, but it's awesome, and it's not the best horror movie, but the way that everything is set up and shot and how sound is used in the movie is just like freaking, it's so scary.
Right. Well, that's like, the thing about the genre is like every now and then you just get one that comes out of like oftentimes out of like a low budget, but they just do something weird or twisted. And that's when it's amazing. And I'm not a big horror film guy, but yeah, I do like it when every now and then when you get one of those just totally amazing.
Well, I feel
accidents,
like horror,
I feel like.
Yeah. And I feel like that horror is like a, it's like a genre of films where people are trying new shit, you know, like,
yeah,
right.
It feels experimental to me. Which is maybe why I'm so drawn to it. Cause I'm not, you know, yeah, it's,
well,
it's kind of
I think it's cause it's dismissed, you know, it's like it's utility film. It's like how, you know, all you need to do is make a film that's going to scare teenagers. And then once you've done that, you're free to do like, whatever you want. You can do crazy shit.
You know what it is too? It's like, I think horror is like, what, say you're gonna choose to play metal for a living.
Yeah.
You know right off the bat that you're foregoing commercial success. You know that like you're not gonna be mainstream and you have your niche. And I think, you know, in horror it could be the same thing where, you know, people, you know, like you're not, you know, this isn't gonna be Top Gun.
Right.
You know, this isn't going to be like you know that you're losing the mainstream anyway. So it maybe gives you more room to move around inside of that space.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, also the fact that maybe it's not taken as seriously in Hollywood for that reason. Yeah, it gives you some freedom, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, before a certain time or place, if you were in a hardcore or punk band, you were basically making a decision that you were never going to be very commercially successful. Right. Like that was literally a focused decision you were making about your own life. And of course you're going to give less of a fuck if that's the case, you know?
True. Yeah. That.
You know all about that. So with all the, you know, instrumentation you use and how much you know how to play yourself, where do the songs begin? Like on which instrument? And,
yeah, I'm a guitar player primarily. Like I would say that's probably the instrument I'm best at. So most things are there of the things I've written and recorded of late. But new things have largely been written on synthesizers, mostly synths. Yeah, which is weird because I'm not a keys player by any means at all.
Okay. But
it's inspiring to just honestly like having all those patches, like, you know, guitars, like you can make sound a lot of different ways, but like something about synthesizers are pretty fascinating. The last few years have been pretty fun, like getting into synths and, definitely like on that last project I did, the national one, Say Goodbye to Pretty Boy.
Yeah.
That song, I mean, that whole record I recorded like this time last year. And it was mostly like, you know, a drum machine and a couple of polysynths and I have a Rhodes piano. It was, you know, that was mostly it.
Very cool.
Yeah.
What's an inspirational synth for you? Like what do you like to monkey around on?
Ooh, I love Prophet Rev 2. Nice. You know, the Dave Smith Prophet, right. I think is like, I'm a huge James Blake fan, like massive. And, you know, I just loved his tone. And when I found out that he was playing Prophets, I was like, oh, I want one. Right. and that was it. Yeah. And it's, yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, sorry, Benny, to answer your question. Yeah. Most songs start with like guitar and a melody, or a synth and a melody that I'm singing. Mm-hmm.
And when do lyrics come into play with your writing?
At the very last minute.
Okay. Very last. So you have melodies worked out and then you fit the lyrics into it afterwards.
Yeah. I feel like I'm just freestyling every time I sing the song until I write it. And it's literally like everyone in the studio is like, okay, so are you ready to replace your scratch lyrics now? And I'm like, yes, I'll make some decisions now. I just don't want to make the decision. It's so hard. Choosing lyrics is so hard.
Yeah. 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 I don't ever want that pressure.
I kind of hate it, but it's fun. Yeah. Every time I hear it back, I'm like, okay, cool. You know,
right.
But it's hard to let them go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I noticed, I watched, you doing, a live thing on New Noises. I had never heard of it until I saw you on it. And, you were talking about the drummer and some of the musicians in the group you were playing with that, that you seem to be playing with a pretty long time. How do you go about finding or keeping like a consistent group of musicians to play live? And is there a group that you always use?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, this project is like fairly new. Mm-hmm. compare like when I stack it against the people in my band, like I know them from before, you know, like previous projects,
right?
Like Carter, my drummer, when I first moved to New York, he was in the first band that I played in, and he was literally like 19, 18 at the time. He had just moved up from Vegas.
Oh, okay.
He's like such a character, man.
Yeah.
And he just shredded drums. Cool. And I was like, man, I'm keeping you in my back pocket. Like one day we're going to be the thing, you know, me and you, kid, you know, that was the energy. and then that band was, it was good. But we didn't really do much and it broke up and he got me in another band and, you know, and that's kind of how I met everybody. Like I could tell you everyone's origin story. I won't, but, basically, yeah, we just met through bands and, you know, playing a lot. My bassist is this guy named Brian D'Amelio, who recorded the band I was in, Stay Inside, for the first record we did. And I was just like, whoa, you're a great engineer. and we just stayed in touch. And I was, when I was wanting to record another thing, I was like, dude, I want you to help me do it. And our friendship kind of grew from there. And he's been playing bass for me ever since. But I have like a big network of players, you know, like, I've played in so many bands and like literally the first like handful of shows. And even now, like I kind of just put the call out. I'll be like, hey, everyone, like I'm playing like these dates, like who's free? Like, you know, and everyone's just like, oh, I could do it if Dan can't do it. And da 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 da. And that's kind of how it works out. It's like a big family, which is like how I'd love to keep it, you know?
Yeah, so, sure. Mm-hmm. And you plan on, you know, whenever the world's not burning and you can go play some shows, you plan on keeping that same group of guys together?
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. Right. You know, I would love to. And man, like, yo, like, the way I see it is, like, I know in my mind, like, there are people, shit, who knows what's going to happen. I've been in bands before. You know, like, people, right. Man, I've seen some shit in bands.
I know that,
like, right now we have a great chemistry and everyone is cool. Like, and the egos are good and, like, nobody, like, I'm pretty good about reminding everyone that I ain't shit. Like,
sure.
I ain't shit. Like, we ain't doing shit. None of us have any money. Let's just go and have fun. You know, like, what's this really about? You know, it's about, like, supporting each other and making sure each other can reach their potential, their dreams, you know?
Yeah,
like, we all believe in each other. And that's kind of, like, what bonds us, is we all think that each of us is big enough to go the distance, you know?
So, that's awesome. That's actually nice to hear too. Cause to me, the idea of like, you know, completely, or, you know, successfully completing something like an album or a tour and it being good and still being able to walk away knowing you're not shit and you still have a lot left to prove, I think is one of the things that makes like good artists great. You know, it's good to never be that impressed with yourself. I think it can help with, maybe you don't enjoy moments as much sometimes, but I think it can help in the long form because, you know, you never get too ahead of yourself or too impressed with yourself. It's probably a good way to be, man.
Yeah, man, you gotta be, right? There's so many great musicians and I want to play, and I want to play with all of them.
Exactly. You know? Like, yeah, exactly.
I don't, you know, like someone asked me the other day, they're like, what's the like, what do you want? Like, what is success to you? And I'm like, honestly, like, I just want to play with the people who inspire me. Like,
yeah.
I want to be in a room with Terrace Martin. Like, I want to like watch that fool work. That's when I'll be like, oh, I'm like doing some shit. You know, like Deb Hines is here. I'm doing some shit. Matt Berninger's here. You know, like that's what you know, everybody wants, you know,
I want that.
You know,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
I saw that New Noises live stream was on March 11th, which, you know, is now sort of notoriously like the, what I imagine the Rudy Gobert day, because that's the
the day the NBA fell apart because of that. So March 11th is always Rudy Gobert Day to me now. So you were still playing, and I remember even in that you said you had a couple shows coming up after it. How was that few days around there, and when did you kind of decide to shut it all down?
Oh my God, it was so scary. Yeah. We were so excited to be doing that WNYC thing, you know?
Right. Like, yeah.
I was so excited, and I was also like, oh man, they're definitely going to cancel this, right? Because
right.
I feel like shit's really going to pop off, but it hadn't quite. And we had the show the following day at the Sultan Room, which was a place that like is a really cool club. And like, I really wanted to play there.
Yeah.
And, you know, being real. And I, you know, there was like multiple threads about should people cancel? Should we not? Yes or no. Everyone was like, oh, we've got hand sanitizer. And I was like, okay, like, let's just do it. And so we all went up and we drove our little cars up there and we parked and we went in there. And then like, right as we started playing, like the news really started to break about like Italy and like how it was going bad. And and then like the next day was the show, and you know, somehow like, you know, they decided not to close the show, the space, and we played the show, and it was attended, which I was like, wow, y'all are risky as hell. Like I would not have come. Like I was scared. And when I remember like loading in, like we were around the street from like a Key Foods, I believe, or something. Mm-hmm. And like, there was like a line around the block. It looked like some, you know, some TV shit. I was scared.
Yeah.
I was like, we should not be playing. We should all be at home. I don't know what we're doing out here. Scary.
Just get home and get to Ben's Chili Bowl as quickly as possible.
Yeah, right. The vegan chili you're saying you like, right?
Oh, I sweat it so hard. I just interviewed someone earlier today for a different podcast. He's from Chicago, and I talked about I've had some timing issues in the past playing shows and eating Chicago pizza. Because, you know, if you get it before the show, you might play a little sluggish. And then, you know, if you get it after the show, you're eating like these giant pieces of pizza at like 1 a.m. about to get in the van. Also not great. Yeah. And Ben's Chili Bowl has done the same thing to me a couple times where I can't resist.
It's tough
vegetarian
to say
chili cheese fries because they're so fucking good. And that they're place delicious. Is so cool. That I just want to go there all the time. But, you know, an hour before the show, if you're taking that on, it's not a good look. You know,
you got to get to the city early. Like,
yeah,
you guys have to have a talk days before and be like, yo, like, let's not sleep in Nashville. Like, let's push it. Let's stay in West Virginia tonight. It's going to be wild, but we can get to DC by 1 p.m.
It's wise.
Yeah.
How do you have so much wisdom already?
I run political campaigns.
Oh, that's true. Oh yeah, you could have been playing me this whole time, goddamn politician, this whole time. So just I know things are, you know, it's a weird thing to notice, but I notice it because, you know, I've been in the same boat as you many times in my life, but I noticed that from yesterday until today you had about 1,000 more views on your YouTube video for the last song. And I think,
word?
Yeah. And I think, you know, people are really seem to be connecting, especially to this last song, a Mustang. And I don't know, I see a very good trajectory for you coming up. And I was wondering in your own head, where do you see yourself like a year from now? And where do you see yourself like 10 years from now?
Wow. Well, a year from now, I see myself on the road, hopefully,
right.
You know, like I really hope that in a year I'm just grinding. Like, I hope I'm on the road. Like, hope I'm on the road.
Right.
Yeah. Not like, oh, we're doing a weekender. Like, mm-hmm. I want to be gone.
And, yeah.
You know, like, I want to hit it hard. And, you know, and I hope I can do that. So yeah, that's what I hope in a year. And I hope that, you know, in that time I've, you know, released some music that people continue to connect with. And, I hope that it catches, you know, I hope people like it. This is the first time anyone's ever really listened to my stuff. So it's unique. 10 years down the road, I mean, I'm still kind of like, I'm pretty normal. Like, I want to have a family, and I want to have kids and get married, and I like, I see that as something that is really important to me, and so I want to have that, and I want to be into that, you know, in that 10-year mark, and I also want my day to day to be centered around music, like whether that's going on tour for 4 weeks and I'll be back for 3 weeks, or I'm like, you know, producing a band and then I'm going to go on the road for a week and a half. Like, I always want that balance of like producing and making music, but also like touring and like writing my own stuff. Mm. Yeah, I want it all basically. Yeah, and that's basically like the ethos of my music. Like, I always thought you had to choose something. Like, you have to be this guy or that guy. You know, black kids can't have it all. You have to choose something or you'll lose everything. Like, right. That's kind of the fear we have, right. Which leads to a lot of people choosing things that aren't for them. And
sure,
you know, it's fucks with your mind. And so, you know, my music and everything I do is all about like, I want all the shit. Like,
yeah.
I want the money. I want my friends to eat too. I want to get married. I want beautiful kids. I want a big ass house. I want to cut a bunch of records. And I want everyone around me to do well. And that's kind of the goal.
I mean, it's beautiful and it's totally attainable, which is awesome. You just got to fucking keep that knee right, man, you know?
Yo, that's, you know, that's part of like producing in a studio is very important.
Just
like,
stay on your feet, dog. You'll be all right. Stay on your feet.
I got to stay up, literally.
Yeah.
No, see, I just got to like have a couple huge songs and then we just buy a whole new knee.
That's, you know, it.
Like, yeah.
Give me a whole new joint.
Oh, yeah. That's it. By 2030, we could be floating. You might not even need the thing, you know?
True. I mean, yeah. I mean, they literally are, you know, sending people in to do Fortnite shows, you know? Like, Travis Scott did that one. I could do that.
I mean, well, speaking of the modern age, though, I got at you a little on Twitter today because you made a post saying how sometimes, I'm going to quote you, okay? Because Brad's going to love this, too. How sometimes you're tricked by logic, and you said in quotes, many times I've complimented bands' drums on mixes, and many times they've said, yeah, they're Logic drums, and I question everything my ears have ever thought were true. And I don't know what emoji I said or what that was that I sent you, but I sent you a little figurine crying in the rain saying that this is what drummers are like. And as usual, comparing myself to John Henry, which I feel like. But that being said, it's not like I'm dumb to this. I mean, these fucking things sound great these days, and there's a reason I'm so insecure. So what do you think, you know, that being said, what do you think we can still offer the world of rock besides for some long hair, you know, flailing around at a live show?
Oh, really? Like, are you talking about what can drummers offer of the world of rock?
I mean, you know, if you're playing a certain type of music and you're going to quantize the stuff anyway, and people are going to compress it to where it almost sounds digital, I'm even getting to the point where I'm like, you know what, motherfucker, just sample it, you know, just do it. Like, why do you even need it anymore?
Sure. You could do that. I mean, and to back you up, you know, most of the things I mix, all the snares are samples anyways. The kicks are samples. You know, Benny, I'm sorry. It's over. No, I'm kidding. That's not my answer.
That's all right. All right. Full-time podcast host. Done.
No, honestly, my real answer to that is like, feel is irreplaceable.
Yeah.
Like, feel like people that, you know, why people listen to freaking like Bootsy Collins songs today? It's because the vibe is strong. Down pat. Mm-hmm. Curtis Mayfield still sells records today. Like,
that's right.
There are like
a
lot of, you know, like, feel is important. Feel rules. Feel prevails. Always. Feel always prevails. Always. So, I mean,
Keep it coming. Yeah. Give me like 30 more seconds of this.
Yeah, man. So, like, if you got a story to tell on drums, you know, speak your truth, King. Go. Live.
Oh, I feel so inspired.
I'm going straight to the drum space after this. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to play ahead of the click, and I'm going to play behind the click just to mess with these damn robots, you know?
Yo, build your own grid.
You don't know how to push the track, dog. You don't know how to do it.
Build your own grid.
Sucking.
This is your life.
You are your own grid. That's what it is, dude.
That's it.
That's the t-shirt.
Skynet.
Be your own grid.
Yeah,
that's yours. That's yours for free, care of going off track.
Thank you. That's the merch now. Be your own grid. Marty Strange.
No.
And nobody bought any of his music, was it?
Yeah. So what's up, man? You got anything else for us?
I don't know. I'm just
feeling good.
I'm feeling good, man. You know, partying, just sitting around. Yeah. I'm good. No, it's been really cool to talk to y'all and kind of get to know you both a little bit.
For sure.
I definitely listened to a lot of Gaslight, you know, and you know, as I was coming up. So, you know, it's cool to, I feel cool talking to you. So,
well, I feel equally the same because, you know, I'd heard your name, but Jamie had sent a sampler of some of the new stuff that she was working on. And one of your tracks just really stood out to me. And I really think I was excited to talk to you too, because, you know, as you get older and older, it's harder sometimes to get excited about things that you see or people working, you know, and I listened to a couple tracks and saw some things you had to say. And I'm honestly, I was truly inspired, you know, where I see somebody doing something that I think is cool and doing something I want to get behind, not only get behind, just listen to. I just want to listen to it and I want to see what you do. And I wish you the best of luck, man. It's really, I think you're on to something, and I'm really excited to see what you got coming up.
Damn. Well, I'm glad this is recorded because I'm definitely going to play that back. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Nah, no worries. No worries. Yeah. Well, we'll do this again. Once the world's not on fire, we'll have you in New York in the studio. We'll do it again.
Oh, totally. I'm always up there.
Awesome. Well, yeah, thanks for doing this. I appreciate it. And best to you and yours.
Thanks again, Bartice. This was really awesome.
Thank you.
Okay, Bartice.
That was fun.
Yeah, that was refreshing, man. It's like, you know, I feel like a lot of times with these, most of our interviews, it's like we are almost, we know what to expect, sort of. You know, we know a lot of these people, obviously, you or I know personally, or we definitely know where they're coming from. You know?
Yeah, sure.
And this is really cool because, I mean, I feel like I'm talking to a fresh-faced kid, you know, right, who's really got something to say, for real.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's coming from, I guess, like, finding someone who wants to create from it coming from such a real place feels like unique and authentic these days too. You know, like, it seems like a lot of people's intentions are all wrong.
Yeah.
Going into music sometimes and what they need to do. And, you know, things have been shifted so much towards like a live show and kind of some flashy other stuff, you know, where you might focus on your t-shirt, you know, before you're really focusing on your song or something. So it needs to get back to this root.
Yeah.
Which is the fact that like the song itself is the thing driving the entire ship.
Yeah.
And it's something like people seem to forget. So when I see someone who's just like trying to really pull the meat out of it, find some new directions to go, really has something to say, it's refreshing and it's nice. And I'm really excited to hear the whole record and what he's got coming for him. And like I said in that interview, I don't know if I said in the interview or I said it to someone I was talking to, I heard some things in like his voice where I was like, oh, this voice can go like a lot of more places than I've already heard it go. You know, some voices you hear and you're like, okay, this is the way this person's voice sounds.
Yeah.
This voice I hear and I'm like, oh, he could go even lower if he wanted.
Right.
He could go even higher if he wanted. He could go longer if he wanted. So that kind of gives like his future some breadth and like where it could go. Like, I don't even know. Cause I think he could pull off some interesting shit, you know?
Yeah, he seems to definitely be. He's got variety to his tastes for sure.
And what about getting weed in DC?
That was awesome. That was so funny.
So silly.
I'm trying to think if I know anybody who still lives in DC. I know a lot of DC area people, but I don't think I actually know that many. I definitely don't know any weed heads that still live there. That's a great story.
It's just these weird, like, in the last, like, 10 years, since some states have decided to, like, decriminalize and have their own ways of selling it and apprehending it, like, the whole weed thing is, like, the Wild West right now.
Yep,
like,
yep.
No one knows. Like, no, I don't even think cops know. They're like, can I do this right now?
Can I not? This guy?
Yeah. It's, like, confusing. I remember when Colorado first went legal, I don't know what he is, the head of police or sheriffs or something for Kansas was just basically like, hey, we know, like, you guys are legal, but they're just cruising right back into Kansas. And, like, right. Should we be arresting them? Or they, like, needed some federal guidance on the issue. And there is none.
Right.
Every state just has to fend for themselves with that, which is a good thing. It's the beauty of America. But I think it's time we had some federal laws about weed, you know? Different ones.
Yeah, it's probably time.
I think it's time. If I can watch weed. These fucking little kids pour all over themselves naked in their Jeeps, pounding 150 White Claws. If I have to see that shit again, like, tell me that some weird little kid can't go smoke a joint and listen to Dark Side of the Moon on the beach, you know? How the fuck is that worse? Jesus. Drives me crazy. Watch these people drink themselves to death.
Yeah,
know?
It's definitely worse. It's far worse
Come
for
on.
You.
Come kids. On.
Remember that, kids. Choose weed over alcohol.
You know, if we only voted in a really liberal president for 8 years, maybe we would have had legal weed federally by now. Oh! Drop the ball, Baracks. That was your fucking shit. How did we not get weed in that 8 years? Not cool, man. Not cool. Not what I voted for. Fucking droning motherfuckers. No weed. Bullshit. Fucking party line. So, Bartice is on the internet.
Yeah. All you got to do is put an underscore in his name. Bartice underscore strange to get him on Instagram and Twitter.
Yeah.
And he's on Facebook with no underscore. So, yeah, check him out. He's a refreshing dude. That's what I will say.
I would say so, too. And the record, Live Forever. That's the record. Live Forever is out October 2nd on Memory Music.
Yeah, but check out the two singles that I was listening to that just came out are really awesome.
Yeah, I think Mustang and Boomer.
Mustang, yeah.
Yeah, great tracks.
Yeah.
That Mustang track is killer.
Yeah.
Really.
He's got it going on. He's, you know, like you said, there's people that do music because, and he's even basically, this is what he says in the interview, you know, that they do it because they have to.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
If they don't do it, they don't feel right. And he's one of those people and it comes through. So.
Yeah. I think that's one of the reasons I'm like, fat and pretty crazy right now, actually. Yeah. I'm just not playing enough music, you know?
Yeah, dude.
It's the downside to being a drum set drummer, you know?
Yeah.
Because I need people. I need other people to do it. I can't sit in my house and punch on pads and feel accomplished.
You're a pack animal, Benny.
I am. I'm a collaborator. I don't like being out in the lonesome. Only when I choose to be, you know?
All right. Well, soon enough.
Yeah.
Soon enough.
All right. So,
not soon enough, but hopefully soon.
Yeah, we'll see. So our Patreon's been fun. We've been posting some super videos. I posted my defense of Radiohead. I don't know. I'm assuming Fat Mike's never going to see it, so I'll say whatever I want on there, you know? I think that's a cool thing about the Patreon. It's like a blocked little world.
It's a safe space.
Yeah, I can say whatever the fuck I want in there. Those are people literally paying.
Yep.
To get out, like, that's a free forum. I could get raw in there.
They're your fans. They want to hear what you get to say, dude.
I'm going to start getting dirty then. Start saying what I really mean, you know? not this censored.
The real Benny will come out.
Unfiltered. You can hear our interview with Alex Jones we did last week.
Oh, God.
No?
No. Sorry. I'm throwing that one.
Just kidding. Just kidding. Wouldn't do it. I can't talk to people like that.
No. That's not this kind of show, man. We're here to talk to people that we want to hang out with. People we
guy like that. He'll bully me.
Yeah.
He'll bully me with his big mean words, you know?
Roll right over you in your scary t-shirt.
Sure will. I don't have the heart for people like that. I want to give him what can we do to just give him something and shut him up? What do we feed him? Throw him raw meat?
We need to tell him that it's all okay to love their fellow man, literally, because I think that's really what's making these people crazy.
It really is, isn't it?
I'm convinced that every hateful white male is a closeted homosexual. I'm not joking. I'm not trying to make fun of them. I just can't figure out what could possibly make you so angry or so like upset about other people's behavior if it wasn't that you yourself were just not getting what you really wanted.
I mean, if you ask me, and I think it's a narrative I can't understand why people don't talk about enough, it's because they're just all religious.
Yeah, well,
and they think that whatever is happening right now isn't even, this is not the end game. This is like a small blip in their fucking spiritual journey. So all they have to do while they're here is ensure their passage to another place. Some political party has given them about three things that if they hold really tight to their heart, they'll ensure their path to heaven. So it's all just like this selfish, I'm out of here in 30 years anyway.
Well, and that,
fucking
dude,
behavior.
Not
you know?
Even that. The real zealots are waiting to be raptured. They want to hasten the end of the world. Are you kidding?
Right.
Me?
Yeah. They want it even faster. Bring it on.
Yeah. They're no better than the 40 virgins. You know,
I think 72
Muslim extremists.
72, I believe.
Is it 72?
I think it's 70. I think it's in the 70s. Yeah.
It used to be 40, Betty.
1,000 years ago it was 40.
When they were trying
kids these days needed 72 to blow things up. This is bullshit. Yeah.
All right. We got to get out of here because this is going into like
gone
crazy
too
land.
Far off track. All right. Well, thanks to Bartiz. Sorry for
derailing
the verbal diarrhea all over his intro and outro.
And as far, we got a couple new patrons. Thanks. I don't have your names in front of me, but you rule. Welcome to the club. And also thanks for the recent Venmos that we got. If you want to send us a tip on Venmo, it's at Off Track. Thank you. We've got a lot of really helpful, gracious people.
It's true. It's quite nice. I appreciate it greatly. We are filled with love.
You keep us going.
All right. Thanks, Brad.
We'll see you next week.
Have fun up in the mountains, wherever you are.
Oh, I will.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.